Well, we've come full circle, haven't we? Melissa and I left here as newlyweds. We hadn't even celebrated one wedding anniversary. And now we've had 25. And by the providential care of God, we're still in the same place we moved to 25 years ago. And I'm thankful that so many are still in their same place, too. Those who served us when we were students are now serving our children. And it is a comfort to know your kids are being cared for in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And so I want you to know, from a former student and now the father of students, how much I appreciate what you do in the kingdom. And you may not fully realize the impact you have because you're with them and then they move away. But just think about how many churches are being strengthened across our country by the young people you've equipped and prepared to go out into the world. It's been a joy to be with you this weekend. And I certainly express my appreciation for all who prepared for the Young People's Weekend. And among those familiar faces, though 25 years older, I see a lot of new ones. And a lot of young ones. You're kind of like us at Southside. You've had an explosion of babies. Our motto is, if you can't convert them, conceive them. Well, I see you're doing that too. And I have become, by confession, a preacher who says you'll never hear me say one word about a crying baby in the assembly. Because think about how many churches there are who have gone years without hearing a crying baby. Crying babies are the sound of life, of growth, of parents who are teaching their children, understanding that they're not going to hang on every word, they're not going to get everything out of the service, but they will remember we were there. It was important to us. So I love to hear the sound of crying babies in the assembly. I want to read this morning from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27. We have been looking this weekend at people in the Bible who are just like us. People God has revealed through the Scriptures to show us He's always wanted a people who love Him with all their heart. Old or New Testament, He's always wanted those who will serve Him all the days of their life. They're people just like us. Well, I want us to consider one this morning that's found here in Matthew 27, beginning at verse 11. Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor questioned Him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said to him, "It is as you say." And while He was being accused by the chief priests and elders, He made no answer. Then Pilate said to Him, "Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" And He did not answer him with regard to even a single charge, so that the governor was quite amazed. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the multitude any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they were holding at that time a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. If I were to ask you this morning to, in your mind, picture the scene of Calvary, I imagine it would look something like this. Three crosses, and the one in the middle raised up. And we picture it that way because of the significance of the death in the middle. Jesus was crucified between two thieves. And so his death on that day wasn't just the most important death of the three. It was the most important death of all history. And so we think of the three crosses with one in the middle higher. But I submit to you this morning that Pilate did not wake up that day and say, "I'm going to make history. I'm going to crucify the Son of God." In fact, he made efforts to release Jesus. And so it is more likely that the scene looked like this. Three crosses prepared for three criminals. Now, we don't have to speculate about who was crucified on the right and the left of Jesus. These are in all of the gospel accounts revealed to us using different words. For instance, Matthew, later on in our text, just calls them robbers. Now, we need to understand that in the Greek language, a robber was not just a thief who stole from you. A robber was a violent thief. They stole from you and injured you. Which is why when Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10, he said that the traveler fell among robbers. And they not only stole from the man, remember, they beat him and left him half dead. So those on the right and the left of Jesus were violent thieves. They were robbers. They're also referred to in the NIV as rebels or bandits. And that tells us that likely they were partners in crime. They were of the same band. And it makes sense, doesn't it? They had robbed together, and now they're going to die together. When Luke gives his account, he refers to them as criminals. Evildoers is the literal, which is why the King James says malefactors. So I don't want you to think that these men were just petty thieves. They were just robbing because their family needed food, or they were desperate and held somebody up in the corner. These were evildoers, violent thieves, rebels. Well, who would then this third cross have been prepared for? Was there anyone in custody who would match the crimes of these two thieves on the right and left of Jesus? Well, we know that there was a man who's already been introduced to us in our reading by the name of Barabbas. John specifically says that he was a robber. So in the cause of his insurrection, he robbed to support, for money, perhaps for weapons or for information. Barabbas is also referred to as being imprisoned with the rebels. So he led the insurrection against the Roman government. He could have been a party of the zealots who felt it was their duty to overthrow Rome. But he too was a rebel. We learn in Luke that he was imprisoned because in this insurrection he committed murder. Maybe a Jewish leader, but more likely a Roman official. And so because of that, we just read, Matthew calls him a notorious prisoner, one of notoriety. To quote the Three Amigos, he wasn't famous. He was infamous. And so I surmise this morning that between those two thieves, a third cross was prepared for a man named Barabbas. Three robbers, three rebels, three evildoers. Now let's continue our reading in verse 17. When therefore they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Who do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Christ?" So we read that during the Passover it had become a custom for the Romans to release a Jewish prisoner back into society. And perhaps it was in connection with, this is the Passover when God redeemed you from slavery out of Egypt, and so I'm going to redeem one of your prisoners. More likely it was to keep in favor with the Jewish people so that they would not revolt against the government. So he sees this as an opportunity to release a prisoner back to the Jewish people. See, Pilate has interviewed Jesus, and he knows he's innocent. I find no guilt in this man. And so this was his effort to release Jesus. He brings Jesus and Barabbas together and says, "Which one do you want me to release to you?" Now think about that. Who would you rather have walking the streets again? A man who has been preaching and performing miracles and doing good? Or an evildoer, robber, rebel, murderer? Which one do you want me to release to you? Let's see what they say. For he knew, verse 18, that because of envy they had delivered Jesus up. And while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitudes to ask for Barabbas and to put Jesus to death. But the governor answered and said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called the Christ?" And they all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they kept shouting all the more, saying, "Let him be crucified." And when Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves." And all the people answered and said, His blood be on us and on our children. And he released Barabbas for them. And after having Jesus scourged, he delivered him to be crucified. In some of the manuscripts, it actually says, Who do you want me to release? Jesus, who is called Barabbas, or Jesus, who is called Christ? Barabbas is a surname. Bar, son of Abba, the Father. Son of the Father. His name could have been Jesus. So do you want Jesus Barabbas or Jesus the Christ? They said, give us the prisoner who's murdered and robbed and done evil. What do you want me to do with Jesus? Let him be crucified. And so I want you to see this morning that Jesus took the place of Barabbas. It was Jesus crucified between two robbers. Barabbas and us. What are the connections? I want to suggest three very quickly. Number one, we are all worthy of death. We've all sinned. And what does Paul say in Romans chapter 6 and verse 23? The wages of sin is death. And so we have all sinned and are worthy of the wages of sin. And you say, well, I would never murder somebody like Barabbas. I would never do that. Well, have you ever spoken words of hatred against your brother? Have you ever murdered someone with your thoughts and words against someone that James says is made in the likeness of God? You say, I would never rob anybody. I don't care how desperate I was. Well, do you rob God? Do you deprive Him of the things that are due Him and His name? Things like praise and thanksgiving for blessings that He didn't have to give you? Do you rob God of the things He's given you to serve by not using them to serve Him? You say, I would never be a rebel. Well, do you see that each time we sin, we contribute to the rebellion that started in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve? We reject God. We go our own way. We serve self. And for this, we deserve sin's punishment. And Jesus was numbered with these transgressors. Think of that. They were evildoers. He went about doing good. They were enemies. Jesus prayed for his. We're all Barabbas in that we're worthy of sin's punishment, death, separation from God. Barabbas and us. Number two, we've all received mercy when we deserved justice. I think Barabbas had pretty well resigned his fate that he was going to die that day. It wasn't like he was the getaway driver in the deal. It wasn't like he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was guilty. He had done evil. And the law said he should die. Even the robber on the side of Jesus recognized that, didn't he? Remember when the other robber in Luke 23 was hurling abuses at the Lord, and his partner said, "Why are you doing that? We deserve what we're getting. This man's done nothing wrong. And so we all deserve justice." But what does Jesus give to us? Mercy. Pardon for sin. Sometimes people will say, "I just wish God would eliminate all the evil in the world." You ever heard that? Just stamp out all the evil, and this would be a better place to live. Well, would any of us be here the next day? Only God is good. And Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost. You see, Jesus didn't just die in the place of Barabbas that day. He died in the place of us. Barabbas and us. And because he died, we receive mercy. We don't deserve it. It's God's free gift. Mercy. In the Houston Chronicle a couple of weeks ago, there was a story about a girls' softball team in Splendora. And they had caused a ruckus in that community because their coach had made a practice jersey. It wasn't a game jersey, but it was what the girls would wear while they were practicing. And the opposition didn't come from any of the team, any of the parents. That's the way that usually goes, and it came from the outside. And somebody didn't like it because their practice jersey said, "I achieved failure." It was to motivate the girls. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to grow and mature. But nobody wants to be a failure. We can't receive mercy until we understand we don't deserve it. It's unmerited. And if it's not, it ceases to be grace. Barabbas and us. Number three, we've all been given a second life. Barabbas was condemned to die. There were no appeals. He didn't have a lawyer fighting for the Supreme Court to overturn this. It had been decided. And I imagine when he heard the chain of the prison door opening and one of the soldiers coming to get him out of his cell, he thought, "Well, this is it. I'm going to die." Until he heard Pilate say, you're free to go. What, do I have to wear an ankle bracelet? Do I have to check in? You're free to go. You ever wondered what Barabbas did with his second life? We're not told. Scriptures don't indicate. Did he become a disciple of Jesus? Did he follow him after his resurrection? Did he go and tell others about the gospel where their sins too could be forgiven and washed away? Or did he return to his life of crime? Did he just go right back to what he was doing before? Did he get caught up in another insurrection and later be put to death? If so, we would say, what a waste. What a waste of a new life. What are you going to do with yours? Remember, we're all guilty. And we all deserve sin's punishment. We deserve justice. And God gave us mercy. Jesus came down and He saved us. What are we going to do with our second life? We going to just go right back where we were and do the things we did before? We just going to continue in the very sins that sent Jesus to the cross in the first place? Or are we like those who have been redeemed? Use our new life to glorify God and tell others the way of the cross. We've all been given a second life. What will you do with yours? Barabbas and us. You see, by Jesus dying in the place of Barabbas, son of the Father, He makes possible that all of us can become sons of the Father. So what will you do with this Jesus who is called Christ? What will you do with Him? Will you choose to honor and obey and serve Him? Or will you walk away and spurn the sacrifice that saves you from your sins? What will you do with Jesus and the new life He offers? We're going to sing a song that would encourage you to come to Him and give your life and do what He said to do to be saved. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. And every sin you've ever committed can be washed away, and you'll be given a new life, a second birth by which you can serve and honor Him all the days of your life. If you need the prayers and encouragement of your brothers and sisters, if you have a need in the gospel, we can help with. Let it be known.